Welcome to another episode of Psyche of Sales. This is a pretty exciting one. We've got Brian Difford and we've got Kyle Ross from SOI Intelligence. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny. Great to have you in London.
Thanks. Great to be here. We're in a very, very cool podcast studio in Brewdog Waterloo. I'm like a kid in a candy store a little bit with all the technology that we've got here and podcasts. And I think it's going to cost me about 50 grand because when I get home, all I want is a podcast studio. But we're not here to talk about the technology. We're here to talk about, I suppose, yourselves, EnableIQ. And I really want us to sort of dig underneath about what our plans are for the UK market and how we're going to take what EnableIQ does, my background experience, but also your background experience, and how we're going to take that to the market as well. And I will say, having known you guys for a bunch of months now, totally confident that your philosophies in sales, not just talking about it, but the action of it, is completely aligned to how we would be. You know, that sort of relentless nature, that idea of really going for it, and I just absolutely love it. So why don't we start with you, Brian?
Sure.
If you hear me refer to him as Diff every now and again, that's how he's known. He calls himself The Difference. he doesn't actually. That's just a new nickname I've given him. But, yeah, tell us a bit about your background.
Born and bred in South Africa.
I think they guessed that.
Get that quite quickly. Yeah. Got lucky enough to go to university in America, which was an excellent experience. And then working career in a combo between South Africa, United States, and now England.
What did you study?
I studied finance and international business.
And where did you study?
University of Missouri, the Missouri Tigers.
The Missouri Tigers, I love it. Well, I'm a big West Tigers fan in Australia, so we've got that alignment.
There we go.
I liked you. Where's Missouri?
Missouri is basically slap bang in the middle of America. If you threw a dart into the middle of the states, it would more than likely hit Missouri.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, if I think of my top 10, 15, maybe 60 cities I want to go to in America, that Missouri's certainly up there.
It's a flyover state, so good luck trying to find it.
Okay, good. obviously into your sport as well, Diff?
Yeah, I grew up as a swimmer traditionally, spent a lot of time, managed to get to a fairly high level. Had to learn to deal with failure actually quite heavily in sports. I missed the Beijing Olympics by one spot in 2008, which was quite a tough pill to swallow, but taught me a lot.
For those that are listening, I want to make it clear, I don't actually know any of this stuff about you as well. So we've been chatting, but we talk business all the time. So I didn't realize you were that good.
Oh, okay.
So yes, missed out on the Beijing Olympics.
Yeah, and then after that, took up triathlon a couple of years later and did some cool stuff in triathlon and then started having kids.
You can sort of tell by the competitive nature of you that you were an athlete at some point, that sort of desire to win. You also, from what I hear, won a very famous open water 6.5 kilometer swim. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it depends on your definition of win. If you categorize it on male and female, then yes.
Yes.
If you take it on overall, then no.
Okay. All right. So Diff won the men's race, and a lady who won the women's was an Olympian and beat him as well. So he's done well. I'm gonna take that as a win for you as well.
I'll take it. Thank you.
Beautiful. Kyle, what about yourself?
So also started from South African, as you can tell. Same as Diff. From a family of educators. Parents were teachers. And then I followed a bit of rugby and then got into corporate sales. When, unfortunately, due to injuries and that type of thing, rugby didn't give me the returns that I was hoping for.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I started learning in a great corporate environment and working my way up in the ranks of sailing.
Well, they told me that it was skill, talent, and heart were the only three things that held me back from making it in rugby. But aside from that, I was destined to be an international, from what my coaches told me anyway. It is one of those things because I played rugby growing up as well, and I remember talking to a friend of mine, a good mate, who went on to play professionally. And I remember saying to him, he goes, "So why did you quit?" And I said, "You know, when you get to that point where you just realise I'm not going to play professional rugby," forgetting he played professional rugby, he goes, "No, I don't know what you mean." That's a good point because you actually went on and did it. So that was that for me, and it's interesting that I made that transition over to sales and did find similarities in that idea of where the work needs to go in to be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense. And it's not a career. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say that. You can coast in sales, and I'd say most do, but those that don't are the ones that are the high performers. And I think that's really that impact there. I might pause the interview bit as far as just your background, and I might sort of touch on this idea of we got introduced about, we'll call it 6 or 7 months ago.
Yeah.
A mutual contact who's heavily involved in our business as an advisor and coming on in a more permanent state as well as a chief commercial officer. So big shout out to Sharpie and Andrew Sharp there for making the intro. And he said, I've got some guys I think you need to meet. South Africans based in the UK. He described you as enterprise sales guys in the technology space. And between all of you, that experience from running global businesses, obviously from Paolo's perspective, people on the ground selling, sort of learnt from the ground up, to managing teams around the world as well, obviously yourselves. And so, number one, you got the experience level of being able to take it, and that's what you do for a living, right, is you take people's technologies and you introduce it to the EMEA market. Is that a fair assessment of SEO?
That is, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that the things that got me were, just from an outsider, you seem to get the sales piece quite quickly in how we do it, why we do it. I think there was an acknowledgement quite quickly that you sort of you liked the way we frame sales, the philosophy behind it. And to us, that's a make or break, because we do believe the way the world sells is fundamentally flawed. So, you know, we say it all the time, but we can't go down that path. But number two, I sort of took the humility of yourselves when you were getting on the platform using it, saying, I'm learning. Like, yeah. I'm quickly learning this as well. And you know, I think that people, to be a high performer, you need confidence, 100%.
Yeah.
But there needs to be a level of humility, because how else do you get better?
Yeah, you've got to always be learning, you know? Absolutely. I mean, interesting story, Johnny, of how we also joined the dots with coming to find you. I think our paths are almost destined to join in a way.
Yep.
We sat back, again, about 6 months ago and looked at, we bring a couple of really disruptive technologies into the market, but what we were starting to realize is the nature of sales cycles it's getting much harder. It's not an easy profession, and it's getting harder and harder every year. And we looked at what was working and what wasn't working, and we came to this sort of realization that a lot of the stuff that was working really well was being generated out of our networks. And there was a bit of a disconnect at the point in time where the people we had in our networks weren't the exact people we needed to get to. And so what I mean by that, traditionally what we were selling, the discussion was happening at a CIO, CTO level. But we come out of sales environments and account management and teams and customer engagements, not the sort of hardcore technology side of businesses.
Yep.
And so our network wasn't aligned with what we were selling. And I think we went through this process of saying, well, how do we marry these things together? Yep. And we got to a point of saying, well, if we look at our network and we look at our skill sets, we should be trying to find disruptive technology in the world of selling.
Yep.
And almost right off the back of that, Kyle joined the dots with Sharpie and our relationship started to form. So it was quite an interesting way of the universe connecting us together, actually.
Yeah. And it's something that we're going to share either through a learning cafe or a podcast to the listeners. The step-by-step process of once we agreed to work together, and you represent Enable over here in the UK, the sales process we started from awareness campaigns to networking to asking for referrals to getting lists and doing multiple nurturing campaigns, which is still going. I still get the out of offices now, which was told it was fixed. Thank you, Prue. But it's still not there. So, my emails are getting absolutely packed up because of that. But actually, how you look at a market from scratch and how you build it, if you were to do it in the perfect world.
Right? Absolutely.
And it's never perfect. I don't think we perfected it, but I think we did a good job. But also, none of us are looking at a 3-week return. We're looking at a 1-year, 2-year, 3-year return. And again, there's that piece. And I think that it's interesting hearing you talk about that idea of disruptive, because we are, in a way, disruptive, but we're not. Like, I don't think it's disruptive, because I think, why aren't we already doing this? Does that make sense? Why isn't every salespeople in the person in the world spending part of their time trying to get better at their craft? Why aren't sales leaders working at how do we get more high performance? Why aren't we looking at the right data points that actually help us drive teams? Like, you look at a salesperson's diary, and I can straight away tell you whether they're successful or not. Because what percentage of the time are they spending in front of customers?
Yeah.
What are they doing to actually be better at it? What are the time are they spending in reflection to work out how do I need to spend next week differently to how I did this week? And I think that's what we're driving, is that kind of less excuses, more put our focus in the right areas piece. And you're right, sales is getting harder because, you know, we just had that Brett Sinclair podcast, which we literally said afterwards we could have talked for 3 more hours. So we're going to do a few more together. But people are using AI to be repetitive. And so it doesn't matter if you're doing things well. The fact that there's a million other people hammering people with emails and messages, you will then be looked at in a similar vein to that. So you've got to be able to stand out. So I'm really glad that we got introduced. I'm really glad that we've had the chance to work together in this space. But I agree, getting harder, number one, there needs to be a need to almost go within to look at how do we become better. And I think that you're not just talking to it, you're demonstrating it every day in what you guys do.
I mean, I think we're in a fight here to survive. If you aren't at the top of your game now in the world of selling, an AI bot is coming to take your job.
Yeah.
You know, that is unfortunately the truth of it, I think.
Cole, you were going to say?
Yeah, I think, John, you touched on a very, almost like I see it as a golden thread, weaving all those together. And it's behavioral components.
Yep.
So I think where Brian said earlier about looking at the network and the technology fit for the network is it was driving the right behaviors to find that. I think another thing which I'm excited about the conversation with Enable is you might do the behavior right, but there's always an element of being able to improve that behavior.
Yep.
And learn from those mistakes or learn from how do you take it to market better. I think through this process and like we're learning as we go, and there's always elements, even if we might do it fairly well, we can always improve.
And I think that's the thing, is like we're just learning to work together as well. And I'm realizing that there's different styles and personalities that are going to be here, that Kyle will always be early from here and you're going to keep it together and so on. You're both very good with technology. I'm going to push the line there a little bit from there. I think I'm like you on steroids with the working to my own clock piece sometimes. I was a bit late this morning because I went for a walk in London and got completely lost, and an hour and a half later rolled into home. Had a ball though. It's any consolation.
And tackle the homeless man, so
yeah,
we're told.
That's right. So I think there is those threads that you've got to put into place. But it's, you know, it is an element to, and, you know, when you say there's a fight to survive, and we'll call it AI is one, but I think it's a fight to survive because there's so many people fighting for that one customer dollar right at the moment. Like, you know, I talked about last night, I went for a Sunday roast and it cost me £44 for a plate of food at a pub. So that's $90, right? Interest rates are through the roof. Like, people are looking at where they spend their money more than ever. I don't know many businesses out there that are saying budgets are up next year, we're going to spend more money in these areas. Like, they're all looking to cut costs. Yet there is a new technology out every day that people could be using. And what I found when we got into this space, we had a pretty quick learning curve. We're not trying to be a learning management system. That's not our belief. There is a million of them out there. And this is the thread. You talk about a golden thread. This is what I've noticed in learning management systems, is a company, often driven by a CTO or someone in IT, looks at this space with maybe a sales enablement or sales strategist, and they say, this is a new learning management system we're going to use. And they go through all the ticks and the boxes and they look at pricing and they get the cheapest with the most features, right? And we go, great. And what they find is over time that a lot of that technology is technology for technology's sake, right? We had an LMS approach us wanting to have us exclusively on their platform and showed us four things that it does, you know, and they are so cool. But they're solving a problem that doesn't exist. Like, no one's asking for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So whilst it would be cool to release them, if you looked at the top six things that are used and then the next four, they would be the next four. Like, no one's going to use those things to start off with. I'm not saying down the track, maybe not. And so there's that piece. Number two is technology decision makers are so far removed from salespeople and sales teams, so they don't own it. And you think of the personality of a salesperson and a sales leader, it can be almost a bit cult-like. You know, they're on their own. And I think so there's that piece there that I think sales teams need to own it. And I think the fact that we come from that space, that mindset, helps with that alignment. The next we find is that they put content on it. And the first content they put on an LMS is always good because they're excited. And then they just chuck absolutely everything at it.
Yeah, exactly.
And when that happens, who do they blame? It's the learning management system. There's a problem with the LMS. No one's using it. Usage rates are down. So then they replace it, because the IT has to, with another one. And the exact same thing happens, right? And I can show you organizations that have used three or four in the last 7 years. thinking that the LMS is the problem, not the content, which is why we're so strict with what goes onto the platform, because unless it helps you sell more or manage a sales team to sell more, you will not see it on the platform. We can put your content on there, but we have to vet it first to make sure it's of a certain value, because the moment people stop going there, they stop using it, they stop wanting to get better, and that whole cycle starts where you'll replace us with somebody else for no reason whatsoever. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that was the other thing that it took a while for probably you to get your heads around, because you are quite good with tech, is how our discussion isn't a technology discussion.
I love that point, because that's something that it's so relevant. Like, why in the world of business has the conversation shifted from we're trying to help the sales teams create these epic environments with their customers, but the decision is being made by a CIO or CTO just because it comes in the form of a platform?
Yes.
There is a gap in the thinking there. And what ends up happening is the technical people make assumptions based on how they think salespeople think.
Yes.
And they just simply don't know. And then it becomes this finger-pointing exercise of it's the LMS that's not working. But the whole process hasn't been designed around who's the actual end user and how do we connect with them.
But the reverse is true. If you think about CRM, and then people hit the CTO up and say, look, the CRM doesn't do this, 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 and this. Let's face it, most CRMs can do all of it if built to be able to do it. But then the CTO is, their hands are tied because the salespeople aren't entering the right data. Yet the sales manager or the exec is saying, well, I need data on this, 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 and this. And they're saying, but it's not there. Great, so we need a new CRM. No, it doesn't matter if we change CRMs. And it's interesting, we wanted to integrate early with CRMs, with LMSs. Now we don't, really intentionally. We want this a place that people go to and come back easily, that isn't connected to that. I'm not saying one day we wouldn't be, but certainly in the short term, we've pulled back on that development for the reason is that we sit on people's intranets, we sit in LMSs just as a single sign-on. You know, you've just got the logo there, you click on the dashboard, and you're straight through to the platform. And we would rather sit there because some of the conversations we were having with large groups around security, for example, where they're treating it like we're taking customers' banking details, which isn't the case. We're taking an email address, a name, you know, we don't need to. And actually we find the technology people the easiest in this because they get it. They're like, yeah, why would we try and treat you with that level? Does that make sense? And we've passed every single one of these InfoSec pieces. So we're very proud of that record, but certainly I don't think we need to start there, right? And have you heard the term deal fatigue? One of my mentors sort of taught me this idea that, you know, you start a conversation and it's like months later, and you actually forget why we started the conversation, because we're just ticking boxes and we're going through all these processes. And in sales, it's so critical. We keep bringing people back to the reason you approached us in the first place is you've got 90 salespeople and they're spending on average 26% of their time actually talking to customers. And if we can up that to 55%, you're going to see a doubling of sales without a cent spent on extra people, right? That simple value of why you're here. We're missing targets. It's getting harder and harder. The market's shrinking, but we need to grow because our share price won't. They're the reasons people come to us. You've got to keep coming back to those reasons. And when it becomes a technology discussion, how do we almost separate that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about when we were building our relationship. Carl will probably laugh at me during this story, but I think the reason why we've got on board so much and backed it so much is because we came from a standpoint of, we've done this for a long time, so we are in the position to stress test what you're saying.
Yes.
And at every point in the journey, we said, we used your so what methodology, right? Trying to figure out the man behind the curtain. What is the real reason that you do these things?
Yep.
And we stress tested the, why doesn't it integrate? And we stress tested, you know, does this actually work? And I think going through that process, once we started learning, has got me on board more than I would have ever been able to get on board had we not stress tested it like that. And I think that's why this relationship is going to be so successful, because we couldn't do that with some of our other technologies because we aren't necessarily like super technical people.
Yeah.
So
it's funny you say that though. To the real world, you are both very technical. Like you use technology well is what I'm saying. That the way you integrate, the just the Google Meet into the sheets. You know, the fact that it's all there, it's all shared quickly. You're very efficient with tech. You're trialing, I know, the virtual AI assistant. Kyle will have to get a check in on what are they called?
Simply.
Simply? Okay.
Simply.
Simply. Yeah. So Simply. Should give it a name.
We should.
Yeah, Lorenzo. We've got a real Lorenzo, so we won't call that. But we'll come up with a name on this. But I think you are good with tech, especially compared to our market, meaning salespeople are out there, and we used it from day one, even when we looked at potentially raising capital, that idea of we leverage technology to get the best outcome. We don't want to be in it. And our platform will look very different in 2 years' time and 3 years' time. Sorry, it won't look different. There will be extra elements to it, but I think that ability sometimes just to say no, you know, when people say, do you do this? Can you do this? We can't do that.
Yeah.
Why can't you do it? Because we have no interest in it, because it takes away the usage of the person just jumping on and being able to plan for a meeting.
And like you said, it's just not valuable.
Yes.
You know, if you can't take the few seconds to log into a different system to work on your own skill sets to be better at your craft, whether it's integrated into a CRM tool or not is almost irrelevant, because if you won't do that little piece, you're not going to do the rest.
Yeah.
I think what's also very, very exciting for me is we've spoken a lot about tech now, and you mentioned deal fatigue, and I'll term something else off the bat as maybe tech fatigue.
Yep.
As there's so many CRM platforms and LMS platforms you touched on earlier and things going around out there. What got me excited about Enable is it's looking at how you engage with people and how you make that better. So almost putting tech aside and enabling you as a human to sell better and to prepare better and to interact better. And I think that's where the selling market is lacking a bit.
But you also make the point where, sorry, I'm speaking in front of the microphone here, that tech can make relationships harder.
100%.
You know, like we've met every time from the other side of the world. We met on Friday for the first time.
Mm.
But we're sitting there meeting all four of us with our laptops up, you know, with our phone next to ourselves and so on. Like we even had... Probably this morning's the first time we've just had a chat. Does that make sense? And really just have a conversation about, I shouldn't say, we're over the phone a lot and things like this. But we do have meetings now with, like my iPad's here in case I want to take notes and all these sorts of things. But it's probably just distracting more than anything else. And so that idea of putting tech aside, I think is, you know, everyone wants a technology that's going to help them improve their processes. But do you actually know how to, like what's the process meant to look like? Have you mapped your end-to-end buying process? And I use buying, not selling. How do your customers genuinely buy, right? And how do we optimize each of those stages? We had a group before, one of the CRM, what do they call them? The consultants that help you embed it and tailor it and so on. And they wanted to help us with this marketing software. And they started with, we're going to sit down and do a strategy with you, and we're going to map your sales process, and we're going to tell you how a great sales process looks like. And I said, you're going to tell us this. And I laughed at the guy. It was like 60 grand to do. I just needed them for a day to embed something for me. He says, it doesn't work without the sales process. I said, so but what do you know about sales process? Oh, well, we read this thing online and there was so we just used that process to do it. I said, so for every organization, you just follow that process? Well, yeah, because we read this methodology. And it's like you wonder why we get sales teams that are ineffective or sales leaders, they're working with a very reputable firm. Think about the big consulting firms.
Yeah.
Technology driven versus genuinely, how do you optimize sales, right? How do you look at the, how do we make sure that when our salespeople are sitting in front of a customer, you know, this one technology I saw meant that at any point, the best brochure, information piece, presentation, they could just access immediately and AI would know from the meeting what the best piece is. And I remember saying to the guy, but where is it driving the questions they need to ask? Because AI is not listening to the meeting, right?
Yeah.
How do we actually sit there and say, I don't know if I could solve something for you yet because I don't even know what the problem is. Like the amount of meetings I'll sit there 20, 30 minutes in and just say, I'm not sure I can help you. Everything you've told me, it sounds like you're doing it perfectly. And then they'll say, oh, well, actually, we're missing targets with this. This is great. Why? What's driving that? What have you tried? Like we have an actual discussion based on the problem. And so do you want to solve it? What would the impact be if you could? What would the impact be if you couldn't? Right. So we've not just established the problem. we've put a value on the problem, solving it or missing it, and then we've driven a motivation to solve the problem, right? And then we build a solution together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're emotionally attached in that scenario. It's not just nice to have. You're invested in why, and you understand, more importantly, the impact of not doing something.
Yes. And I think that that's the piece of, and it's not even just not doing it, it's trying and missing. Like, you know, the businesses we deal with, it's not up for negotiation. Like, they need to hit these targets. Like, listed businesses, you know, they're committing revenue numbers, right? And if it's not through revenue, it's through cost cutting. And I think most execs and senior sales heads get this, right? If we don't hit our numbers, what does that mean next year? You are working with less people. It's just a fact of life, you know. And I love the idea of being able to equip sales leaders with conversations with CFOs and execs when they're saying you need to cut $1 million out of your bottom line this year, and actually saying to them, or I've run the data, and every salesperson, whilst costing us $250,000, generates 1.25. I think we could generate that to 1.6. Right, we have 20 salespeople, so that extra whatever it is, 350, is $7 million to us. So there's your million covered, but it's going to cost me 250, or it's going to cost me 50. Does that make sense? Like, to be able to have a data-driven conversation, rather than a CFO or a CEO or an exec whoever says, "Yeah, we have to just cut $1 million." No, I understand we have to cut $1 million, and we can do that, but understand that'll cost us 3 or 4, right?
It's not also solving the problem. I mean, there's a direct impact maybe on the bottom line, but again, that's taking a short-term view. Yep. Like, the long-term view, you're still going to have, you'll have less people, but that sort of 80-20 mindset, you're not changing that. You're still going to have 80% of the revenue coming from 20% of your high performers.
But this is the other piece. Sometimes we get blinkers on a little bit, where we're 12% market share, we're 16% market share. This group in NZ that we've spoken about, one of the greatest examples I've ever seen of just taking the blinkers off and saying, what's possible? 16% market share 5 or 6 years ago, 47% market share today against global competitors. Like, we're not talking a small business. We're talking a $500 million business that has gone from 16 to 47. If you'd asked them 5 years ago, is 47% possible? What do you think the answer is?
Yeah, there's no way they would have said yes.
No way it's possible, yeah. Right?
I mean, that's amazing results, really.
It's huge results. But again, I dealt with a client. They said, well, 80% of our business comes from these 20% of our clients. So why don't we just get rid of the larger team and just focus on these 20%? And I said, well, why don't you get a bigger team and focus on your biggest competitors' 20% that's giving them 80%? Like, what could we do to win them? You'd never get their top 20% of clients. Why? Like, what are the conversations? Have we detailed a strategic plan of these 500 organizations, the 15 stakeholders at each, so the 750 people, which ones are known to us, which ones are friendly, which ones are not known, which are unfriendly, and how do we go about shifting that over a period of 2, 3, 4 years through awareness, through adding value, through insights, through podcasts, through providing technology to a market? You know, I'm not saying it's easy, but how many people are having these conversations on here is the opportunity and how do we access it?
Don't you also find, though, that there's like a hidden away trait in there where you want people to look at this longer term vision, but the truth is the sales manager has an annual target. Yes. He has to do something about it for this year. I can't even think about next year. How do I fix it just for this year? The next year rolls around and he's only thinking about 2025. It's like, I feel like there's a bit of a disconnect there where we want to plant seeds for a longer term growth, but we're not willing to make decisions that doesn't impact sort of only this year.
But it's that question, isn't it, of is the short term important or is it the long term that's important? And the answer is they're both critical. And you can achieve short term wins with a long term view, right? But, you know, it's this idea of when we sort of map out how a pipeline should look. And, you know, for us, you know, we're building a business and we have a number of users with a particular client. It's our biggest ever. But it won't be in 6 months from now.
Mm.
And it won't be in 2 years from now. But to get someone to commit 10,000 users to a platform, it's a big conversation. And you build the trust sometimes through a team of 250, and then it goes to 1,000, and then it's 2,000, and then the 10,000 is an easy conversation. And so it's that idea of how do I win short-term value? So click my wins across, but potentially where are those opportunities that are short-term wins that could long-term be something better? Or how do I win the smaller deals without putting 40 hours a week towards these small wins?
This is one of the fundamental flaws I see in the art of selling, in the world of sales, just in general. And it's a lesson that we haven't managed to learn from sports, just from my perspective, is if you look at all the guys who are true, true high performers in their craft, in their sport, they are willing to sacrifice anything to make a small gain, and lots of small gains make a big gain over time. And every sales team that I've been on in my career, they are, everything is just related to a number that you bring in. There's no other factors around that important. So if the number isn't big, you're not important. But nobody's looking at what are those small wins that you're getting along the way to improve and improve and improve. And we're not making a big deal out of that. And so that causes people to not be bought into it, to lose their confidence.
Yep.
You know, if the only metric that's important is the overall number, how do you ever drive confidence if you're in a rough market? You could, you know. And I think there's a gap there in the world of sales.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very valid point, because I think what if you look at the sales environment is to chase a big number, there's often, to succeed in that number, you get thrown a methodology or something that you have to do on a day-to-day basis. But then if you're doing that methodology effectively, you might not necessarily be doing the right behaviors to make you successful within that methodology. So I think that's where it gets really interesting, back to your point earlier, is how do you find that balance from a behavioral and growth standpoint that contributes to all three of those different areas?
And then it comes back to just trusting the process.
Yeah.
Once the process is right, and you know, I read you that message I got from a friend of mine for New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Sends me a nice message every year. Big thanks to Shawnee for that. But he said, be humble like Khaleesi, treat pressure as a privilege.
Yep.
I think it is. You know, that idea of changing the thinking and then trusting the process. I heard this mixed martial arts fighting coaches, and he said that he put his people in positions that were really uncomfortable for periods of time, so that when it happened in a fight, they knew what to do, but more importantly, they knew how to be comfortable. You look at stand-up comedians, that being comfortable in uncomfort or discomfort is really critical, because there are going to be times where people won't laugh and you still have to be comfortable on stage.
I mean, we're dealing with one of those moments right now. We both said earlier, I mean, we're a bit uncomfortable. It's our first time doing a podcast together.
It's weird Aussie.
Yeah.
from here. But it's also, of course, it's uncomfortable. And you'll get more comfortable the second one we do, and then more comfortable the third. But if you did some practice in between, you'll be twice as comfortable the second. And then practice in between, you'll be three times more comfortable in the third. And I think that's that piece that, you know, I cop a bit of stick sometimes. I don't need to prep for a talk to the same level as I did 10 years ago. I just don't. I could just stand up and deliver and I'll get a great return, but I'll never do that. But I'm also not going to spend 4 hours preparing for a 1 hour talk. Unless it's a topic I'm not as comfortable with, but I always want to see the venue beforehand, right? I'd like to get there early so I can do the prep bit, so I can just stand on stage and feel comfortable. But what I've also worked out over these years, and Brett and I talked about this, Brett Sinclair, who we referred to earlier, know your strengths. And I'm never going to want to be the totally polished, every minute's perfect, because I'll always prioritize connection over content. Does that make sense? I'll prioritize walking away with a clear takeout than I will making sure my slides are perfect.
You bring it back to that human element again.
Yeah.
And I think is the basis of selling.
100%.
Yeah.
And that's that piece of that, you know, we talk about AI disruption. Their personalization is from what I've seen in evidence so far, is a generic personalized.
Well, I mean, we had it this week, right? We've been trialing using AI for certain lead generation functions.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple people come back where they are concerned that they've come back and said, is this really you speaking or is this your AI bot speaking?
Yep.
And the message I'm taking out of that is you know, people love to buy but hate to be sold to, but they also want to have a personal connection. And I think if you had to ask, at least in my opinion, if I had to ask a couple of people, would you prefer I was talking to you personally or had my robot talk to you? They're going to say, I want the personal touch for sure.
Yep.
You know?
It is that thing, isn't it, where when you say we hate being sold to, we also hate, it's that feeling of being sold to, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it's just when we extended the podcast studio, more than happy to pay the £95, but when it said you're using a company card, so we're charging you an extra £1.50.
Yeah.
It does my head in.
Yeah, me too. You get angry about the £1.50.
Just charge me £96.50. But don't make up some reason to hit me on the other side. I went to a restaurant in America. We had a great time. 20% service fees factored into the bill, but isn't considered the tip. So they recommend a 20% tip. Just put your price up 20%. Don't pretend it's a service fee. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that idea of it feels like we're just trying to get you from every angle. I think with the, you know, I'm mindful of not going over the same thing I did with Brett earlier today. AI is really good at potentially finding the right people to speak to, but we need to be connecting with them properly. And he said the problem with using AI, and his business is selling it. He joked on the podcast saying, I feel like I'm on the side against my own business sometimes, but he does that in a very clever way. Find the people. But if you're using AI to nurture a lead to the point where you actually meet them, you're not going to be anything like the previous contact. So how will that make them feel in your first interaction? Like, think about that. The first interaction that you meet with them with, they're going to be different. And we say one of the biggest influences, one of Robert Cialdini's principles of influence is consistency.
Yeah.
Right? And it's why I changed my speaking style and consulting style as I saw myself on stage on a video in high definition on a talk I did 12 years ago, and I performed a talk. I performed it. I knew what to say, where I was going to stand. It was in front of 3,000 people. Like, there's a reason why I went to that length. But at the same time, that wasn't me. And I said, if I met this person the next week, because my business is never going to be 4 keynotes a month. Mine is affecting genuine change of how people sell, how people treat their customers. That's my goal. Who knows where I'll be in 15, 20 years, but at the moment, that's where I want to be, which means being on stage, I need to be the same human being that I am off stage. And I was on a boat with the guys in NZ a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about that whenever I'm talking to their group of 350, 450, and then I'm on the boat having a beer with them, jumping in the water, they said, you're the same guy.
Does that make sense? I love that.
Yeah. And I think that's really critical with communication, is that there's a level of consistency. And, you know, it'd be interesting to put 10 emails up written by ChatGPT versus a person, and can you spot it? Right? Like, it would be interesting. I think I can. You know, we had one of our staff members that was using ChatGPT exclusively till I said, mate, you need to stop. It sounds like a robot is writing it, or someone where English is their fifth language. Right? It was so far removed out there. I'm okay with using ChatGPT to give you the idea of it or whatever. But ChatGPT doesn't, it's again the challenge. It looks at all of internet, not the 3% of what's the perfect email structure.
I also think it breeds a bit of laziness. You know what I mean? Like, part of being good at a craft, no matter what it is you've got to do the hard yards. And if you can let the machine take on the hard yards that you don't want to do, it's making you lazy. You know, using your mind to think about how to craft a message that's going to land with someone you're speaking to, rather than just typing it in and getting 10 different options and selecting it, you're not really learning much out of that.
The guy who started, I'm going to get it wrong, I'll find it and get the reference, the crypto wallet business, and they really struggled earlier. And they asked their customers what they wanted, and I think they wanted the ability to be able to trade and so on. So he changed the business, and he had a mentor, and I think it's the cyclist Greg Le something.
Is that the guy? He's got a Netflix.
I don't know.
Anyway, he's got a Netflix program.
I'm ruining this, so I'll quickly say it again. It doesn't get any easier. You just go faster, or you just go further.
Yeah.
And I always think about this in our business, and I tell my team this every year. We're 4 years away from being the startup. But don't expect it to be any less work. It's not going to be hard, but revenue will triple. You know, we'll acquire way more customers. But then that's the same challenge, is how do we make all the customers happy? Does that make sense? How do we make sure our technology keeps up? You know, we're working on a speed piece at the moment. We want it to be faster, right? So that's a piece that we're working on. It's like we had some bad rain a few years ago, and I had my house, and it's a 100-odd-year-old house, heritage fronted, and we're doing a lot of renovations to it, but the roof started leaking. And so we had to get the roof not redone to look at, just more holes put in, things put, like it cost us $40,000. But you couldn't see it. You know, when you do the pool area or the back area, you do a new bathroom.
It's a great example.
Right. Yeah. You see it. It looks great. You know, we did the kitchen, dropped a lot of money on the kitchen, but you can see, you're cooking in it every day. This roofer couldn't see a thing. The money we're spending on the speed is no one will see. They'll feel it. It'll be quite minimal. And the new people won't know what it was, if that makes sense. And it's that idea of we need to keep this going. We need to keep content. We need to, you know, now I'm buying a podcast studio like this. These things happen. And you're right about that laziness thing. If you're not focusing on those, you know, those four or five key things and just doing them repeatedly. And I read this thing this morning. I had it sent to me. I might even find it. But it was, it's this idea of, let me see if I can find it. Yeah. So it's the Zen diagram, you know, the three circles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's desire, action, consistency.
Within the middle, it says magic.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, seen it.
So we'll get that put up, you know, for the group as well.
Yeah.
But I love the term magic. Not performance, not this, but that's where the magic happens, right?
Yeah.
And I love it consistently. Consistency. Is it the great salespeople, the great sports people? Like, if you went and did 15 training sessions this week, and then 3 next week, and then 2 the week after, and then 21 the week after, will that work?
No, I call it structure, but it's a similar thing. It's like when you put structure into something, you actually create freedom.
Yes.
And this is part of what you were saying. If you had to put up any seller's diary, if they are structuring their time, they're creating freedom for when they can go do what they want. But then they're creating structure to get all the prioritized items that they need done.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same thing with sports. And I saw this in my own journey. I mean, in triathlon, at an amateur level, I was training myself exactly like you're saying. One day, if I felt like running, I ran. The next day, if I felt like swimming, I swam. The next day, felt like riding a bike, I rode a bike. And that got me, I qualified for a world champs, but it never really got me to do anything cool.
Yeah.
And then I started working with a coach and we started structuring the time. And actually what made the biggest difference from a performance perspective was when it was easy, I needed to go so easy, I felt guilty. And when it was hard, I needed to go so hard, I felt like I wanted to die. And what that gave me is this massive variance between hard and easy. And that structure allowed me to bring out proper performance, because when I was going hard, that was teaching me what it was going to be like on race day to go hard. And then I used that feeling to my advantage.
And that's the perfect bit though, isn't it? Because you're not saying, and I'm not saying, as a salesperson, you must go hard for 50, 60 hours a week. That's not possible.
Exactly.
Right? But it's having the structure to make sure where you... I'd rather you have structure, take 5 hours off a week and go do something for yourself, right? But while you're working, making sure you're focused on those key areas. Kyle, you're very structured.
Tried to be.
What do you do to put in place, and how are you always on time?
I don't think I'm always on time, but I think it's...
Okay, don't worry about it then.
I'll tell you, he's got no kids yet.
Yeah, that's right. Chuck 4 kids at you in a big business and then we'll see how you...
And I suppose it comes back to the point you mentioned earlier about behaviors in a way. And that, for me, leads into structure, is having the flexibility to realize that things don't always go according to plan. But when you have as a seller, as you say, there should be certain things you're doing on a day-to-day basis in terms of structure. Like us starting a new business, you kind of know you need to be reaching out to a certain amount of people and generating pipeline each day. And then you also need to know you need to be upskilling yourself. And then you also need to know that you need to be following up and chasing your deals and all of those type of things. So it's having a good idea and understanding of what a structure to be successful should look like for you on a day-to-day basis.
But can I throw out and I'm still not sure where you fit on this spectrum. So, look, I'm a big believer in structure. My diary is my life. like everything I do personally is in my diary. If I've got kids swimming, my kids swimming is in there. Like I literally put everything in my diary, travel time, you name it, right? So I don't have to stress. So I can just be relaxed and have fluidity in my life. Does that make sense? Like I have freedom because of the structure. But my natural state isn't as structured as what your natural state might be. Does that make sense? Like even the way you dress, the way you, like if you seem like a structured person. Does that make sense? And I think this is something that I've always said with people in sales, but in business in general, is you've got to know yourself, know your style, and work towards that. So I don't need to worry about, like I'll finish a meeting, I'll finish a podcast, I'll finish a talk, I'll finish a coaching session, a training session, and I'll be like, my energy is so low today, I've got nothing, right? And my clients will tell me, you always at this level, thinking I'm running at a high energy, and I feel like I'm 1 out of 10. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to, I'm learning, try and put myself up. Does that make sense? Like it just naturally, I think that comes across. So in reverse though, I've got to be mindful to people who are incredibly organized and analytical to not rush them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
To take a few breaths. Now, I'm never going to be a natural state where I'm going to sit in meetings for 3 hours if we can get the solution. But we had this early days, we had a whole bunch of people in the company and a couple of them are very analytical people. And in fact, you know, three of them were, and we had a meeting, we had 2 hours put aside, and within about 7 minutes, we just were going in circles. I said, guys, this is really simple. There's five things. What are they? Does everyone agree? Who's going to do what? What is the timeline? So we're 15 minutes in. I said, great, let's go to work. And one of the people said, you rushed it. Like we've got an hour and 45 together. Why don't we spend the time and go back over? I said, because we're going to come up with the same result. We've got other things we can do. And they said, Johnny, you're going to have to learn to slow down and work to our pace. And I said, you're going to have to learn that this is my company and my clients can do that, but you need to work at our pace. Does that make sense? And I think it's just really important that we know ourselves. We know what our natural state is. We play to our strength, right? Because I think being incredibly structured, demonstrating to our clients how structured we are, is a really attractive trait. Does that make sense? But also knowing the reverse of it, so you can throw that curveball in.
Absolutely. You don't want to be too rigid either, right? Because then there's no flexibility when things come up that you want to change.
And I should say you don't come across rigid in any way.
I think you're hell of a rigid.
Yeah, I was starting to wonder.
Yeah, yeah. All right. It's true. But it's true, right? And I think we're probably getting into quite specific details here, and maybe we'll save some of this for the next podcast. But I just think whether you're a salesperson, a sales leader, you're an executive, not enough thought goes into what is my style? How do I want to be known? How do I want to be remembered? How do I want to be described? How do I want to be seen? If that makes sense. Like one of my clients who's become a good friend called me up and said, just wanted you to know, we love working with you. We'll always work with you. We think you're brilliant at what you do. But there's a lot of comments about you're hard to catch, right? And we were kind of operating without an assistant for that period of time. And it was that, yep, bang. So the hire, straight away, we're looking the next day for someone to run my diary, right? It was just immediately, I can't do it. I'm just not good at it. I shouldn't do it. And it's, you know, I see that as one of my biggest weaknesses.
Mm.
And I don't want to be seen that way, but I probably am. Right, I don't mind being seen as busy because I think it's fact, it's true. We're good at what we do and lots of people want to work with us, but I think you don't want to look
like you don't care almost.
Number one, don't care or not organized enough to be able to deal with it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that's an important piece. Guys, let's, we've been going for a while now, so I think, you know, probably an hour or so. So maybe we could start looking at what are we going to do from here? How does our week look?
I think we've got a very exciting week coming up.
Yeah.
We've spent a lot of time, Carl and I, brainstorming how we get the best out of this week. And I think some of it is around getting all of us in front of clients and we learn from you and you learn from us and we try and figure out what works in the context of the UK market. But then I also think we're going to spend some time working on how do we get better at our skills by spending time with you, crafting how we're going to do this in the UK. So there's an element of the training side there. How do we create some cool content for our, you know, the people we want to get this message out to in the world?
Yep.
And then also, I think very importantly, let's spend some time together and start to learn each other, right? How do we know? I want to know what your style is and, you know, why. The better and more I know about you, the easier it is for us to all work together and like properly start to create a relationship, because I think that is a big part of what we do, is we have to be able to form meaningful relationships with people.
Yeah, completely agree. I think when I first started thinking about this week, I thought it was, yeah, if we're not speaking to 50 people, then it's a failure almost. To now I'm, you guys know what you're doing. We'll set it up that that's the case. I'll be here regularly to do that. I think we need to create a high performance operating rhythm.
Yeah.
So it's a great business in 2 years' time.
Agreed.
Right? Where we have clients who love what we do, that appreciate what we do. If there's a block between Aussie and English, you know, in that sense, that we need to make some changes that adapt, you know, do we need a customer success? Like, whatever it requires, let's work out what that looks like. But how do we get this operating rhythm right? And again, I think that for those that are listening that have businesses, that have teams of people, like we're talking about six of us working well together or seven of us. Imagine if you've got 100 or 150, 20, right? That's how you optimize teams. And if you think about a rugby team of 15 players, seven on the bench, you know, the coach, you know, how they operate within each other is such a critical element. Not how good is Khaleesi, how good can he bring other people along? If there's three injuries,
yeah.
You know, that they use that in rugby league a lot. There's a couple of the teams that have done really well. There was one last year, I think it was the Roosters in rugby league. They made the semis, but they came from nowhere. They were coming third or fourth last, but they had so many injuries that the coach refused to talk about it. He just said, that's not a reason. It's all about next man up. We have total trust in the 17 players that walk on, you know, in that squad. And I think there's that piece there of how do they work together. I think it's a critical piece, and it's often, it's not thought about strategically.
And it goes more than just knowing the players, right? Like you look at a large portion of why people say Sir Alex Ferguson was so good as a coach. It wasn't because he just knew his players, but it was because he knew what a player's grandfather's favorite whiskey was.
Yeah.
And he would get them that for their birthday. And that meant something to that player, because the single question he asked him was, would you die for my team? And if the answer was yes, they could come on the team.
Yep.
So it was more than just knowing the players. It's really learning how to truly connect with people, yep. You know.
Any final thoughts, Kyle?
No, I think I'm energized and excited, because I think I've said it a couple of times, and I think it's what's lacking in the sales environment is that the almost the old school values of human connection, getting to know the backgrounds, getting to know people, and then like we might know technology, we might know new things that are happening, bringing the old school values through like a bit of a new school flavor and new school eyes and connecting. And I think that's what enables and getting it to market's an exciting prospect. So let's see by the end of the week how structured you think I am, but
yes,
we could probably fill the...
Well, there's a lot of pressure. I might put you in charge on me getting the train on Friday morning to Paris so I can get to Burgundy for the weekend, because I've got a...
That's a great chance.
I've got a Burgundy tasting now that's been arranged for me on Friday afternoon, and I know that, you know, Thursday night we've got our event, and then we might go for a couple of beers afterwards, and in my head, I'll just get the 11. I'll get the 12. You know, and keep pushing it back. So I'll just get a flight. So we'll work on that. But guys, I'm super excited about what we can achieve here. As you know, I'm pretty mission driven when it comes to this, and I really believe it. And I think that, you know, little plug here that we talk about, like, what's the bottom line? Like, we can use these skills to help new businesses raise money. We use these skills to help our charity partners, you know, grow their charities out there. You can say tongue-in-cheek helping very successful organizations become more successful, but the individuals that are within it are more confident in what they do. They like what they do more. They feel better about it because they've got more structure, that they have more confidence, and they get bigger wins, which means they can set things up for their family in a really strong way. And I think that if we keep being mission-focused, our sales methodology is we don't have a methodology because we're client-focused. You know, that idea of situational selling. I think if we keep that in mind, it doesn't matter where we go around the world, it resonates.
100% agree.
All right. Well, we're going to go take it to the UK over the next week. Thanks for anyone who listened and for joining us. As always, any questions, you want something for Brian, for Kyle, myself, you want us to do something on a specific topic, let us know. We're going to pop back in later this week to do another podcast as well. I'm saying that on here so we can, you know, commit to it. But you'll hear from us quite a bit over the coming months. So anything you want to hear, please let us know. But otherwise, let's go. Let's get stuck in.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. Bye.